Welcome, everyone. My name is Lear. I am one of the YA librarians here in this beautiful teenscape. Thank you for joining us today. We have a very special career conversations today. Our topic is working in therapy. Please welcome from Soul Tenders. They have fun giveaways afterwards, so stick around. We have Susan and Adriana from Soul Tenders. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. So the first question just kind of is a gentle, if you want to tell us what path you've taken to get to where you are today. This is like talking about careers, internships, specialized training, things like that.
Wonderful. We thought we'd start with a little warm up, a little game. Mm-hmm. And why don't we do that one?
Okay. So we have these emojis here.
Thank you. So anybody wanting to share maybe what their mood is right now at the moment?
Excited.
Excited. That's a good one. Okay. There you go. Anybody else?
Anxious.
Anxious. Yes. That's another good one. Here you go. Anxious. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Intrigued. I loved all these words, intrigued, anxious, stressed, all normal feelings, right, that we all have throughout the day. There's not just one feeling. Sometimes we may be having different feelings at the same time. Maybe one more?
Who else has a feeling today? How are you feeling right now?
Informed. Informed, okay.
Wants a squishy.
Interested. Okay.
Great.
We have one. Two more. Two more.
I think there's still some in the back.
Oh, we do have some, yes. Anybody else?
I'm excited.
Excited. Here you go.
Squishy.
Yeah. Lost. Okay. Good ones. These are all great descriptors. I love it. Thank you for participating. I know, Susan, we also have another question, right, in regards to maybe what do you know about therapy, or have you ever been to therapy before?
When someone says therapy, what do you think of? Come on, my volunteers.
I think about healing.
Healing. Yes. Okay, yeah, that's
well
beautiful.
Said.
Yeah, it's very beautiful. Okay.
So when I think of therapy, I think of our steps, like ways to conquer fear or something that you're trying to work on.
Yes.
I see like levels of how to get there, not just pushing yourself, oh, we're going to do this.
Yes.
But step in it.
Okay, yeah, and allowing yourself to go through that healing process, right? Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else?
I think therapy is listening.
Okay.
Sort of, because you are able to speak, and it's not like having a conversation with anybody else, but that person's an active listener.
Correct.
Makes you feel like you're
Yes.
And you move constructively.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Awesome.
Anybody else? Yeah? Oh, that's great. You all describe a lot of the work that Susan and I do. Yes, active listening, helping somebody else feel heard, and validating whatever they're going through, taking steps and being a healing, journey, right?
If you could raise your voice just a little.
Sorry.
And you can
use the mic. And being a journey of healing, right? It's a healing process that everybody goes through it differently as well. Anything you would like to add?
What kind of stereotypes can you think about therapy?
Yes.
That's wonderful. That's exactly what I was hoping you would answer.
Yes.
Because when our bodies are unwell, if we have a toothache, we go to the dentist, right? If something's wrong with our foot, we go to podiatrist. If we're having trouble in our relationships, we want to achieve something, give something up, we have addiction issues, we go to a therapist, right?
I remember growing up, the term was head shrinker, which to me had a very negative connotation.
Any other names like that? A shrink, head shrinker? That came from the Freudian age, where Freud talked about the mind being broken into three parts, the superego, the ego, and the id. The id being the desires and impulses that we all have. The ego is who we show others that we are. And the superego is like the parent in our own brain. It tells us, you know, running across the street in a yellow light is probably not the greatest idea right now. So it's your own inner therapist. And so a head shrinker would be somebody who was able to teach you to use more of your superego than your ego. Deflate the ego, shrink the head. That's where that came from. That's my understanding. Yours?
Yeah. Yours? Yeah, it's very beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. It's very beautiful. And exactly, I love that Susan brought up that question, because there is a lot of shame and stigma in seeking that therapy, right? So, and this is why we love to do and going out and providing the resources and advocating and sharing what we do to also destigmatize what therapy is about. Yes, absolutely. I'm like, do I need to? Is it working?
Well, the mic is just to record.
I see. So it's not to project our voice.
We don't have any.
Got it. Okay. I feel like I'm in a therapy room. Yes. That's why. Yeah.
Louder?
Yeah. Louder? Okay. So shall we go into the question?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. That was great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So if you'd like to talk about how you got to where you are today, the different careers, internships, and especially if you could touch on if there's internships for college-age students as well as high school-age students, okay, as well as adults who are looking into a second career.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do you want to go first and then?
Sure, I'll begin. I started my career as a daycare worker. I was in infant toddler. And I was, that was 1982, and I loved it. I loved being with children. I loved learning about child development. And as the years went on, I was really disappointed on how much money I was making or not making, because that's, you know, not a very well-paid field. And I also became interested in parent education. So I went to junior college, PCC, and took some child development and human development classes. And it was a while before I transferred into Pacific Oaks, where I finished my four-year degree, a Bachelor of Arts in Human Development, specializing in early childhood. And then I began teaching parent education and child development on the college level to help parents understand their children and to break cycles of abuse. Specifically, that was my goal.
Okay. So I began my career, I was a business major with an emphasis in human resource and a minor in psychology. So before that, when I was in high school, I took some psychology classes and I was really intrigued by psychology, but I didn't have much guidance as to what would come after my four-year degree, and business sounded more of a concrete kind of career, and that's what I heard around me. which is, I always say, follow your passion, because once you know your passion, you're able to bring it forth in everything that you're doing. So I was a business major with an emphasis in human resource, minor in psychology, because my life always brought me back to my passion in psychology and pivotal moments in my life. So after I graduated with my four-year degree from Cal Poly Pomona in business, I became a human resource supervisor. And which again, with human resource, there's a lot of psychology, motivation, talking to others. So I realized then that my passion was in psychology. So I realized that, I started navigating the graduate program process, which again, I emphasize anybody that has questions to ask questions about how to get into programs, seek help of your counselors, teachers, whomever, librarians, anybody that you can, to ask those questions. So I went into research. After I was in as a human resource supervisor, I researched and I reached out to other teachers from other schools that I didn't go to school to, because I know research was important to have into getting into a graduate program. So I reached out to professors at PCC, Citrus College, Cal State LA, Cal Poly where I went, and a professor from Cal State LA allowed me to do research with her. So I did research there that allowed me to also do presentations at different conferences and symposiums. After that, I also needed clinical work. So I did a lot of work with an agency called Project Sister, that they help survivors of sexual abuse and trauma. So I did a lot of work with that. Then I got into my graduate program at the University of Laverne, the Master's in Marriage and Family Therapy program. And there I did a lot of specialized training as well. I did my practicum at an agency called Foothill Family, a lot of school-based, working with children, families, teens, adolescents. Then after that, I did a lot of work I did work at the same agency, Foothill Family, with an intensive program called Wraparound. So we work with foster youth, at-risk youth, and then at Soul Tenders. And I still continue to grow. I do work with Soldiers Project, which they help veterans post 9/11 and on. I like to do work with sex trafficking and human trafficking, helping those survivors and advocating for them too. And there's an agency called CAST here in LA that I do work with them as well. So I like to continue growing in my career, in my paths, and it's been a non-linear path, so meaning there's been a lot of roadblocks, which I also want to emphasize that sometimes we feel like it has to be one way, but there's a lot of roadblocks or a lot of obstacles or a lot of detours that you may take as you are learning and growing what your passion is about. And there's nothing wrong with changing your major or following your passion again, because like I said, I started as a business major because that's what I heard would bring in the money, and that's what I was thinking at that moment. But it was a block to my passion, which I love helping and being there for people. So that's my path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, therapy is often a second career choice for many people. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways I find that therapists become therapists is from their own journey in therapy. Mm-hmm. And that's how it was for me. At that time, when I was doing parent education, I was struggling as a young adult. And I started my journey in therapy with a wonderful licensed marriage and family therapist. And I decided after maybe 6 years that I wanted to become a therapist also. I came from an abusive childhood, and I learned to reparent myself with this therapist. I did a lot of personal healing. And I wanted to help people. I wanted to give the gift back that I had received. So I went on to a master's program and in clinical psychology at Antioch University. And it took me 5 years. I was licensed in 2000, graduated in 95. There were different requirements to be licensed back then. So it was 5,000 hours back then. So 5,000 practice hours under the supervision of a licensed clinician, and you keep track of every hour that you do in different categories: children, crisis, couples, families, individuals. Let's see. After the internship, then there's a written exam that's done by computer. It's an all-day written exam. And then back then there was an oral exam to sit before the agency which governs all therapists, psychologists, licensed clinical, what's the LPCC? Licensed professional counselor. Yep. Psychiatrists, we all report to the Board of Behavioral Science Examiners. And they used to have panels. So you'd have maybe five professionals, and they'd give you a case, a pretend case that you would have to solve in front of them. They gave you 3 minutes to take notes and half an hour to come up with a treatment plan, interventions, a theory, whether it be family systems or Freudian, I passed. So I've done a myriad of different types of work. I've been in the prison system with men who have abused their wives and children, with people struggling with addiction, with drugs and alcohol, children with severe emotionally disturbed children, we call them SED, and foster care, group homes, court-mandated parents, and private practice, always a little bit of private practice all the way along. And then I became a teacher to other therapists, and that's called a clinical supervisor. I ran an agency for a while and did some private clinical supervision. And now I'm also with Soul Tenders. And I've been there about a year and a half.
Yeah. Does Soul Tenders do internships at all?
Yes.
They do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More college or high school?
It's
college. It would have to be graduate level.
Yes.
Graduate level. Yes.
So, in regards to earning hours, correct? That was, yes. So, she was talking about the 5,000. Now, for me, it's 3,000 hours that I need to get for me to be licensed.
You're an LMFT too, right?
And no, I'm 141 hours away from being an LMFT. And nobody's counting. But so you need those 3,000 hours, and that part of it is just the experience that you're getting, whether it's at Soul Tenders, whether it's at another agency, you're getting that experience and those hours to then become licensed.
Mm-hmm. Also going through your own therapy.
Correct, it's part of it.
Is that still part of the requirement?
Yeah. So going through your own therapy as well.
How many here have been in therapy? Wonderful.
That is wonderful. Yeah.
That's great.
It is great.
Did you find it helpful?
Yeah.
How to score or to be a woman. And they were making talk about touch on that point. You know, that's all right. That's about it. That's it.
It sounds manipulative. It sounds to me like how to score a woman wouldn't be my first reason to become a therapist.
No, I didn't say that. I said that the therapist treatment that I give, I'm not satisfied. I didn't say that.
Oh, I misunderstood. Okay. I'm sorry. Could you repeat your question?
No.
Or your statement?
My statement says that I prefer psychiatrists. I'm sorry. Would concentrate on her. That sort of thing, that sort of situations. Because now you have to reflect briefly reality. So that
absolutely. And books.
Yeah, and I don't know, if I can never touch upon it anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just a comment on me. I just introduced it. That if my therapy was helpful to me, then I just answered basically no.
I think you can bring any issue into therapy.
Okay.
Building relationships is a wonderful goal to have. And you're as much in charge of your own therapy as the therapist. Mm-hmm. So setting your goals in therapy should be something that you're actively involved in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's your treatment.
One question we get often at the Career Conversations is freelance, quote, freelance life versus non. So if you're part of Soul Tenders, you're part of the company,
yes.
Or your own person who works within Soul Tenders.
Yes, we're both independent contractors. However, we've both worked and been employed in agencies where we are part of the program. And the way that works is they take a percentage for doing our billing, our secretarial, our setting our appointments, the paperwork, that kind of thing.
And it's both collaborative and group, and it can also be individual. But even if you're like Susan and I that work at Soul Tenders, where it's at the individual and independent contractor, we still have groups where we all meet and talk, and we're always collaborating as well.
Supervision groups.
Yeah, supervision groups.
Whether you're licensed or not, mm-hmm. it's really important to be a part of that as an independent contractor mm-hmm. so that we feel connected with each other
exactly.
and accountable for what we do.
Yeah, constantly learning.
Any audience questions so far? Yes, Justin.
After hearing like the therapist talk and stuff like that, I feel like it's not a certain age to start off as a therapist, not like a actual therapist, but like, you know, a pre-therapist, because my whole life is with that. It's hard, but I get a lot of friends. They always ask me like questions, what to do. And I feel like when you become a therapist, you're giving a piece of yourself to that person, because I feel like it takes patience and a lot of time and a lot of caring and giving to understand that person, you know what I mean? And like get to know him or her to figure out a way to complete the task.
That's lovely.
I love the way that, you know, you're portraying that. It's really nice. Yeah.
Yes.
What do you think the early stages, or like signs that person may need therapy, like before it gets like out of control, like what do you think are the early stages in which someone needs therapy?
That's a really good question. There are many answers to that. If a child is having difficulty in school, for example, there are or difficulty in relationships with their peers, then therapy could start in childhood. I come from a philosophy of family systems, which means that I don't believe that one child in a family has their own issues by themselves. I mean, it would have, the family would have to be involved because the parents are responsible for the child. If you have a friend who's in crisis, if you have a friend who you think is suicidal, I think an intervention, you know, would be important, bringing an adult, you know, with you if they're a minor, someone they trust, to talk about it, to talk, you know, hey, I've been noticing that you're really depressed. You're not showing up for basketball. I haven't seen you, you know, in class. What's going on? There are therapists generally know that they're good with people. Are there any therapists in the room? Anybody who wants to become a therapist in the room? Fantastic.
Yeah, that's awesome. You did too?
Oh, I have a question. Is a high school guidance counselor, are they therapists, or is it the same career path or the same like schooling that you would have?
For a guidance counselor, it would be
now's
different.
A good time to pass out these handouts.
Oh, they have them, yeah.
Oh, you have your handouts. So the answer to that question would be in career areas, there's a list of different types of therapists, starting at the doctoral level, all the way down to just a 2-year or 18-month certificate program. And one thing I wanted to bring up is that no matter what level the therapist is, whether it's a doctor, a psychiatrist, or chemical dependency certificate, mm-hmm. we all use the same book mm-hmm. to write insurance codes and for diagnostics. It's called the DSM-5, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. And in this book are a wide range of human behaviors that we all have. These are, and some people get higher on the spectrum and some people are lower. But you're not broken if you find yourself in this book. There's nothing wrong with you because these are based on human behavior, mm-hmm. human and emotional intelligence. And I'll leave this up here if you want to take a look afterward. Did that answer your question?
You had a question first? Yes.
For like the art therapy, how does one get into that? Like, and what does it entail exactly, the art? And I see music therapy as well.
So within programs, and so we can add to this too, within programs there'll be different specializations that you do as well, whether it's art, whether it's trauma-informed, whether it's with music, pet therapy. You know, you put your strengths and you add it to it and you're able to do that. There's also certifications that you can do. Anything else with that?
So you would get a master's degree in clinical psychology or licensed marriage family therapist. You want to find an accredited college. That's very important. And from there, you choose classes, courses, continuing education, specializations, like Adriana said. You learn about it and you make that your field. For example, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. And after my graduate program and my licensure, I went on to study at the C.G. Jung Institute here in Los Angeles. And I learned dream analysis and sand tray work. And that's one of my specializations. So that's how we do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that clear?
Yeah. So there's different, like you mentioned, different specializations, different courses,
different continuing education credits that we also need to take throughout the year to continue with licensure as well, and that's part of the courses that at times we take as well.
It's a great topic that you guys bring to the table regarding specializations.
Yes.
As a recent MS graduate in counseling, one of the decisions I had to make when looking at the counseling profession was what environment I wanted to be included in.
Okay.
And so we're discussing quite a bit about the clinical aspect of that, which was not my niche area.
Uh-huh.
I chose that I wanted to provide counseling services outside of that format.
Okay.
And I actually got my rehabilitation counseling MS degree.
Okay.
And so one of the things for those individuals in the community that are considering counseling, I think it's important for them to think about the environment, if it's a clinical setting that works best for them or other settings.
Exactly.
Another thing is the degree. Some degrees in counseling allow you to work in specialized areas, and some of them allow you to work in all of those areas or most of those areas. And so I realized with the rehabilitation degree, it allowed me the opportunity to work in a number of settings, whether it's in court settings to classroom settings to, so for those of you that, or for those individuals that are considering counseling, make sure they clearly understand the area that they want to provide their gifts and services, and then also look at the limitations and the benefits from both counseling aspects.
Absolutely.
Well said.
Yeah.
Great.
Well said.
Where did you do your program?
Cal State LA. Graduated this past May.
Congratulations. Yes, good job. That's awesome. Good work.
Court therapy. Are you going to do forensic psychology?
No.
Yeah.
Like, school PCC, actually, you mentioned early on. I'm over at PCC right now.
Awesome. Yeah, that's good. Good to hear. Yeah.
And because there's so many different variety of careers, can you talk about kind of a day in the life? Like, what does your days look like? Do you set your own hours?
Yes. You can go first.
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Well, of course, it depends on your work setting, what you choose, and what your specializations are. So in the handout that went around, there's a list of all the different types of therapists, including doctors, that you can be. And of course, the day would be very different for, say, a psychiatrist who can prescribe medications and does less counseling. They usually give you about 15, 20 minutes, if you've ever had that experience, and then they prescribe medication. They want to know what issues are going on in your life, but the weekly therapy, the really deep work, happens with us. So, because we're independent contractors, we set our own schedules. I'm not a real morning person, so I start at 10 or 11 and work until 7 or 8, Tuesday through Saturday. And there are breaks in between. I'm responsible for making sure that my slots are filled, that I'm seeing enough clients to make an income that I can live from, and we're both on many insurance panels, which is fortunate, you know. Phone calls in between sessions are usually 45 to 50 minutes long. And we're accountable to make our clinical notes about, and confidential notes about the session, how it's progressing, what changes the person's going through, any new issues that have come up.
How about your day?
So my day, like Susan mentioned, depends where you are working. When I was working at the agency where I did the intensive program,
it all depends. There's never a dull moment, per se. With that program, I worked 24/7, meaning 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If needed, I was called out 3 a.m., 2 a.m. after my work day. I worked long hours, collaborated with social workers, attorneys, probation officers, worked with families, facilitated meetings. A lot of work. Phone calls, individual sessions, therapy sessions, crisis intervention as well, hospitalizations if there was an actively suicidality going on as well.
Independent contractors, we are on call, yes. 24 hours. Mm-hmm. If a client has an emergency.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yes, so that too. Yes, so, and then it's, I would do a lot of work too. I worked with a lot of youth as well, so I like to integrate whatever their strengths are. So in that program, we were allowed the flexibility. If somebody really enjoyed hiking, we would go for a hike. If somebody really enjoyed art, I would bring that. So pulling from strengths to be able to go through the healing journey as well. With Soul Tenders, the program, it's not a program, it's more individual sessions. So I still pull through the strengths, but it's the limitations in regards to the hiking and the running, that's more on that so it depends what program you're working for as well. With Soul Tenders, my day-to-day, I'm an early bird. If I have a 7 a.m. session, I am there. So I start really early. Even if I start early, I always end my day by like 5, 6. Monday through Friday, I am also making calls if I need to write a letter, making my notes as well. I like to keep up to date, so I'm constantly, if I'm in between sessions, I am looking up how I can help, interventions, reading a book, watching a TED Talk, doing something to, again, feed my brain to be able to provide that piece of me to the work that I do as well. So that's what my everyday looks like. Yeah.
There are specific guidelines, rules, law, and ethics that we both need to follow. And so if you're going into this field, I really recommend you joining a professional organization for whatever specialization you're going into. For example, there's the Association of Marriage and Family Therapists, specifically to California. We call it CAMFT. And there are ethics that are talked about in a monthly publication that are attached to laws. For example, we can't accept gifts because that would change the relationship between the client and the therapist. Generally, unless it's an emergency, we meet at the office. We don't go for a hike.
Which is the difference with the programs. It depends on the program you're working on and following the law and ethics. Even if that's something that you're doing, it's still important for us to follow those laws and those ethics, that it's part of the test that you take after you have those 3,000 hours, and it's still part of the continuing education that we follow those law and ethics to also help and protect the people that we're working with as well. In regards to that, too, anything else?
If you're working, say, for the Department of Children and Family Services, they have a program called Wraparound, which Adriana's worked in. Mm-hmm. And that's a very different kind of therapy. You actually go to the person's home, you do interventions with the family, you may sit on the floor and build Legos while you talk to the parents. You may help get them housing or bus tokens or food from food pantry. There's really a very wide range of types of therapy that you can be a part of. You can
exactly
become.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to add to that, different types of therapy for counselors and therapists, particularly the younger population. Mm-hmm. One of the things that the mayor of Los Angeles is gearing towards, and hopefully the federal government will be part of, is providing virtual therapy and counseling sessions. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of logistic paperwork going on with that, but mm-hmm. for those of you that are planning on pursuing counseling professions and therapy, therapy and counseling careers, excuse me.
Yeah.
Look at that, because that's going to be a brand new market for you guys to really tap into and really charter and navigate the way that ethically those services will be provided.
Correct.
As well as, you know, you'll set the bar. So yeah. Take a look at that. That's a new thing that's happening and coming.
Yes. How much? I'm sorry, I missed the first part.
Like the school and like the training, what does one need to do to become that?
To work like a hotline, like the Trevor Project or something else. So with that, it depends. Some of their job descriptions may require you to already have a degree. Or for example, when I was going through applying to the program, I needed some of that clinical experience, and they themselves give you some training before you do that. So for example, Project Sister, where I help with the survivors of sexual abuse, I didn't have a master's in psychology, but I was working toward it, and I became certified by attending their 5-day training, and then you're able to gain that experience before getting into a program as well, and that is also very helpful in when you're applying to programs. So a lot of the times they'll give you that training beforehand.
Yeah, as a volunteer or as an employee.
Yeah.
Do those hours count towards the 3,000?
They count up only if you're after you've finished the degree. And if you're receiving supervision. Okay. So not necessarily the volunteer hours. Because I do outside volunteer work with the Soldiers Project and with CAST, and I don't count that unless I'm doing individual. I know, right? Yeah, I implement it here and there. Yeah, I really like working with veteran population but they help post 9/11 on, so. Mm-hmm.
How do you, like, what's your stance on fireworks during 4th of July, since that does sometimes trigger it? Do you think that, like, fireworks should be outlawed during 4th of July? How do you think that impacts veterans that you work with?
It's a good question. I haven't thought about that, but in regards to, it's a lot of the work that we do within that individual. So we individualize that treatment to help them work through it, manage it, cope it, and it's something that we would do at an individual level with them. Yeah.
Yeah, we would take away the fireworks because triggers for trauma can be everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So our goal would be to
identify the trigger,
and to help them that way.
Mm-hmm. Great question.
Let's say how many people you have a day. What's the average to make like a good income?
That's a very good question, and it's an ethical question. 20 people a week is considered full-time for a therapist. And it depends what agency you're working with, depends what level therapist you are. That's a very big question. It depends what your goals, your financial goals are, but I would not see more. Personally, 33 is my max. I know that about myself.
How about you?
It also depends the program you're working in. For example, an intensive program, you won't have more than 12 because of the intensity of the work. But like at Soul Tender is about 20 to 25, 30 average.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to share a suggestion regarding those individuals that are interested in counseling and becoming therapists. Regardless of your age, whether you're a kid or a seasoned adult, I do recommend volunteering, even if it doesn't apply at this moment to your degree. Mm-hmm. Please do that, because the therapist credentials and counseling credentials to get in those programs are very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And I have met students with 4.0 GPAs that are being denied to getting those programs because they need more than a great GPA. They need to have experience working in or being in the environment of counseling and therapy places and institutions. So for those of you that are thinking about it, you know, check out Red Cross, you mm-hmm. know, check out Wonderful. Your YMCA, mm-hmm. any environment. Each hour, each moment that you spend towards that gives you the ability during your vetting process as a potential therapist or counselor
yes.
will be weighted towards that. So please remember that that's key to getting into the program because again, yeah. all of the schools now are impacted.
Yes, and it is, it is key because as I mentioned earlier, me starting my career, I was a business major and I did not have that experience, but I knew I need to get other experience before applying, which was part of the work that I did. I did a lot of volunteer work and research as well to get into the graduate program.
Even the bachelor's, even the community colleges, all of them are following that particular platform. You need to bring something to the table. That's what they need to know from you other than your GPA.
And of course now we're in the technological age, so there's many more requirements we have to be familiar with. We use a program called Simple Practice, which is a way to confidentially keep notes, track billing, keep our better communication. We can record phone calls or emails.
What is better for you in your career, you know, with insurance or cash pay patient? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, with a lot of insurance not always covering mental health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you make a living with low reimbursement rates or versus cash patients?
Like, do you have sliding scales for those who don't have the mm-hmm. insurance?
We do. We have sliding. So our soul tenders were fortunate to be paneled under a lot of insurance, whether it's Anthem Medi-Cal, whether it's Aetna, whether it's Anthem in general. We are paneled under different insurance, and we do have a sliding scale for those that are from 40 to, with our associates, from 40 to about $80 for those that do not have insurance.
We have about 10 more minutes. Any other questions from...
Oh, wow, that went by fast.
Do you have any stress from listening to all these stories? Mm-hmm. Like...
You know,
of course.
Yeah. But it's going through all the schooling, the experience that we get, and going through our own therapy, it really helps how to differentiate that. And at the end of the day, for me personally, I love being there for somebody and providing that support. So that kind of takes away from that and a lot of self-care. We always talk about self-care, not only for the people we're working with, but for ourselves as well. Something like this is self-care, right? Because we're out here talking about what we do, advocating for it, destigmatizing that. So a lot of it is taking care of ourselves as well. So to relieve that, because we do hear a lot of information and stuff and events that everybody experiences, right? So it's important for us to take care of ourselves, especially because we keep that confidential, right? So it's not like we can go home and, you know, if you're having a whatever it is and you talk about it, you can't. That's why we have our group, our supervision, so we everybody. Can consult on a professional level that we also are taking care of us.
Mm-hmm. There's actually a title for that, and it's called my brain, I just had a senior moment. Transference and Countertransference is the name that we put on that, and that is that of course we have our own life experiences that, you know, if you come to me and your brother has passed, well, my brother may have passed. And so I want to talk to Adriana about that because I may have feelings that have come up. Gee, I had this client who came in today and we had this bonding moment, but it made me sad. It reminded me of the grief that I've been through. Mm-hmm. We hold our clients, we call it holding. The more experienced you are, the easier it is to be in a flow with it. In the beginning, we're sometimes a little bit more traumatized, but
yeah.
What's like your office, like on the
curious about it. Like, is there a chair and another chair with lollipops?
I love that question. And it's different as well. For Susan, she will have this wonderful sand tray, and it's so calming in there. I know. So it's wonderful. And she can share a little bit more. I just love walking into your office and seeing that. With me too.
I light a candle.
Yeah.
I have a couch. Some people lay down. Some people sit up. Mm-hmm. I also have a straight back chair. Some people come in and they sit in the chair.
Yes.
I stay in the same place and we try to keep our clients coming in at the same time, same day of week, to provide a continuity.
Yeah, to keep that consistent for them. Depends if you, if you work more with children, you know, you're going to have a lot of more toys or stuffed animals or puppets or whatever it is to work with. So it all depends to the age that you work with as well. Yeah.
You had a question?
Yes. So what is the difference of getting a license and counseling than a not licensed?
Can you repeat that?
So what's the difference of getting a license and the, I guess, in the psychology field, then not getting a license?
Yeah.
Like, can one practice without a license?
Yeah, because I noticed in mental health, counseling, they need to get a license or something.
Yes. Yes. Well, you have certain amount of time to, you're not going to be able to renew. For example, for myself, they give you a certain amount of time to be an associate after you are done with your graduate degree. If not, that expires and you have to reapply for another number. So the goal is to become licensed. And whether it's a LMFT, licensed marriage family therapist, licensed clinical social worker, a PsyD psychologist also worked for hours to become licensed as well.
And in the handout we sent out, it will tell you that there are different levels and what you need to do, what schooling you need to have in order to get that degree. There is a type of counseling that requires no license, and that is life coaching. I'm sure you've heard of that. And you just know what you're getting into. You know that you're not seeing a licensed professional. You're choosing someone who has a lifestyle that you want. So maybe you emulate yourself after them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another question that comes up often, I know we're running out of time, is diversity. So diversity in the workplace with the therapist, and also if people are multilingual, does that help because broaden your client base?
Yes, we all have to have special training, no matter who we are on here, to work with a diverse population. We learn about different cultures. We learn about the family systems in those cultures so that we can be sensitive to language, ways of thinking, patterns of behavior.
And speaking another language does help. I speak Spanish, so I love working with anybody, in particular too, utilizing my Spanish to be able to provide therapy too for our Spanish-speaking populations as well.
And many therapist jobs are requiring that now, if you want to work for an agency.
Mm-hmm. So is this something you're shown at the agency, or is this at the college level, providing therapy in another language?
Yeah, well, the cultural
It's a passion of mine. As I was involved when I was at Pacific Oaks in creating something called an anti-bias curriculum. That was in the 80s when we started that. And it's about the time when dolls became available that looked like all people, books, TV personalities. Justice, social justice, has always been very important to me and a big passion, which is why I chose the school I went to, because they were known for that. So yes, and in your master's program, if you're going for a LMFT or clinical psychology, you must take every semester a class about diversity, and you examine your own biases. Because we all have them, right?
Exactly.
Does that answer your question? Great.
Thank you so much. We are out of time. Mm-hmm. This is the moment.